Soxy Soxy.
Good morning, Tam Tam. How you doing, girl? Oh my God, it's an early one today, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, it's even earlier because our family has been up since 3:30 this morning because you know that when you change up your plans, your kids forget to sleep.
Oh, of course, because why get a full night's sleep, right? That would just be too easy.
So Lennon's been up at 3:30 for the last 3 days straight. And then I said to Sean, I was like, you know what? We really have to make sure that her schedule's on track because, you know, kids like really need a schedule. And so what happened was we're like, okay, cool. Put her down at 7 o'clock here, which is 6 o'clock your time and Pacific Standard Time. And so we put her down and then Phoenix fucking got up at 3 o'clock going, I have growing pains. So she was up from 3 o'clock. Oh. And that's why you should only have one kid.
Okay. So basically you're saying I'm on the right track.
Yes. You are the smartest person I know because now I'm like, when it's not freaking one, it's the other. So I can't even imagine people with six kids. Like, you're never sleeping.
Yeah, you're never sleeping. Like some of the guests we've had on that have like that many kids. I mean, it's literally like, you just don't have time. Like, how do you do it? But mad respect to those parents, you know?
Yeah. And our next guest is pregnant. She's someone that I met actually. I think we met in those two trips. We met in New York City. We did like this campaign. We're ambassadors for a company. And I found out that she had the same birthday as me. And I've never met someone with the same birthday as me. So I was like, okay, I need you to be in my life. And a digital creator, a travel enthusiast, a yoga teacher. She created Limitless, because it was Leslie, so smart. Which are these trips that, you know, for escapes for those looking for movement and purpose and adventure and change for the greater good. She's also a breast cancer previvor. I think I'm saying that right, which is someone who's a survivor of a predisposition to cancer, which resulted in a double mastectomy. And she's one of the most inspiring women that I've ever met. And she's young, which makes me so sad. I'm like, how can you be this inspiring and so young? Like, you should have a few more years on the belt. So we have Leslie.
Woo! Welcome, Leslie.
Guys, Tamin, what an intro. Can you just follow me around everywhere? Please.
I can just be your little microphone being like, and here she is. She is one of the most inspiring women that I've ever met.
The best hype woman ever.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Your road has been an amazing, incredible journey, and we want to talk about it today on our show, and we have some questions and we just want to shoot the shit with you.
My fellow Leo.
Tamin mentioned in the intro that you are currently pregnant. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So we talk a lot about pregnancy and motherhood on the show because Tamin and I are both moms with kids and, you know, all the good things. So, you know, we often talk about, you know, especially with our guests, like their road to pregnancy and like the journey to motherhood. So I was wondering, for your road to pregnancy, was it easy? Was it like an easy journey and easy road for you? And how have you felt this pregnancy? Are you feeling good? Like, tell us all about it.
Yeah. I where to even begin? The journey was a surprising journey.
an oopsie journey.
Yeah, it was.
I had that too.
Roxy knows all about the oopsie journeys.
Yeah, it was a very unforeseen journey until I took the pregnancy test. But with that being said, we weren't not trying. So, right. I mean, the pandemic is, it'll just give you what it gives you. And we're thrilled. So long story short, we got engaged pre-pandemic. So we got engaged back at the beginning of February and started planning a wedding. And then we stopped planning a wedding because because the Australian borders were closed. The world closed. And so then we began doing anything other than what we're used to, which is travel. I mean, I've never spent so much time at home. And take this as proof that mom and dad did stay home, I guess, during the pandemic. Because, so I, like most, like all women do when they get pregnant, they miss a period. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And so I'm very in tune with my body. Mm-hmm. And I know exactly when this is coming, and it came, the time came and went. And so the very next day I was like, I should probably go buy a pregnancy test. Mm-hmm. And I think I just wanted, I delayed it another day. And so then the next day, Sunday, went to
Wait, you delayed your pregnancy test by a day?
Sure
We're
did.
Not alike.
I sure did. Because I think I subconsciously knew what it was going to say. Like I totally
was
going to be positive. Very excited for that. However, I think I wanted to just delay that change. I mean, that's such a
void. Yeah, I get it.
Such a massive change in every way. And I think I wanted to live kind of in my old mind, old body for a few more moments of peace and stillness. So cut to the next day. I'm like, okay, I know this what this is going to say, but let's just do this. And so bought the pregnancy test. It's Sunday night. I go into the bathroom. I don't even tell my fiance I bought the pregnancy test.
Oh my gosh.
knowing full and well that he would be so thrilled. So anyway, I take the pregnancy test and lay it on the bathroom sink and immediately get in the bathtub and don't even look at the results. And
oh my gosh.
I take this bath. It was like, I'll never forget this bath because it was just so, it was calming yet very, very anxiety.
It's like the last bath, like before.
The last bath. And yeah. It's short and sweet because I know I need to get out and look at this thing. So I do just that. And it's like an out of body experience, right?
Of course.
Pregnancy test, and it has this big plus sign on it. And I just stare at myself in the mirror at that point. And I'm like, it's just a life changing moment I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't keep it in within my own body anymore. And I literally open the door, walk out to the living room. Alex, my fiance, is sitting on the couch. And all I could say was, we're pregnant. And I stun gunned him. I mean, so yeah. It's like, he's just there and he's all he can muster up is like, oh my gosh, really? Wow. Wow. No way. Wow. And I'm like, yeah, really. And then I think the funniest part about this is it's late on a Sunday. So we start getting ready for bed. He's in bed and I'm brushing my teeth and I can hear him like almost kind of hyperventilating in the bedroom, taking really deep breaths. And I'm just like, what is happening in there? And so I go back in and right as I get in bed, he jumps up, goes into the bathroom and vomits.
It's like not you vomiting.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be the sick one, right?
Oh my gosh. So it really affected him.
In a massive way. I mean, he was so... And not to say he's not excited because of the vomit, but I think it just took a while for him to actually process it all. And yeah, the physiological, I guess, response was vomit. It was bizarre. And
when I got pregnant the second time, I threw the test at my husband's head. And this is how I did it. I went, I told you! I fucking told you! That is how I announced my pregnancy to him.
Oh my God.
I was like, okay. I fucking told you that I was fucking pregnant.
The drama.
The guy was like, okay.
It's so funny, like, how we related to them. And their reactions are so priceless. So for me, I actually went to dinner with some girlfriends. I started telling them my symptoms and they're like, you need to take a pregnancy test. I was like, are you sure? So we ended up going to my girlfriend's house. I peed on the stick right there with like my four girlfriends in the bathroom. And we all just started screaming. I was like, oh my God, you guys. I'm like
you do for me. Like,
exactly. So then we wrapped the pregnancy test up and I gave it to my husband had been out with some friends that night. So in the morning when he woke up, I was like, here, I've got a present for you. And he opened it and he literally, his reaction, he was like, it took him a minute to like process it. And he was like, it was like every emotion under the sun. Like he was a little bit like shocked, but then he was like kind of laughing, like nervously, and then was like, whoa, like shit. Like, this is happening? Like,
how do you guys wait? I don't understand both of you. I don't. Yeah. My husband's literally like holding the stick as I pee onto it and watching the line with me as the thing goes up. I mean, we are so freaking anxious people and like such control freaks. He's like in the place buying the test. I even peed on one in the car once. I was like so needing to know if I was pregnant that I peed into a cup in the car, guys, while he was driving. And then I couldn't get enough pee in the cup, so I literally put the test in my vagina. I was like, I'm gonna get more pee on the test. I was like, oh, because it's so expensive. They're so expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Like, and if it doesn't work, you're like, I've just wasted $22. On a pee test that doesn't work. So I had it in my vagina going, come on, more drips come out, please.
Was this one a negative or a positive?
That was, again, I've peed on so many sticks. I don't even know. But to be fair, I have been pregnant. We've had lots of miscarriages. So I've been pregnant a lot of times. Like, I've been over a handful of times I've been pregnant. But I have peed on, I've kept them in business. I tell Loxie this all the time. Like, what is it? Plan, whatever it is.
Oh, EPT or whatever?
EPT. Yeah. It's not even an ad, but it should be. They should totally sponsor.
They should sponsor her.
Yeah, they'll make you like sexy times kits, like send them to you. They're like, it's time, Tamden. We need another.
I don't know. I think you girls have got a lot of self-control, which is something I obviously need to.
No, you know what it is, Tamden? It's avoidance. I think it's avoidance. Like, I think we were both like, do, 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 do.
Yeah, agreed. It's, yeah, that's a good word for it.
I don't know. I think kids, you know, I was looking at your stories yesterday, I think it was, and you were like, oh, I'm so tired. And I thought, I actually didn't think that. It's because that's such a judgy thing for moms to think. Although I have thought that. But not with you, but in general. But I looked at your stories and I thought, oh my gosh, don't you, Roxy, remember that stage when you're first pregnant and you haven't had the baby? And it's just so much unknown and anticipation and excitement and fear.
So much nausea.
It's just so much stuff, you know? Yeah. And I just looked at your pretty face and like you have the pregnancy like skin or, yeah, you know, I don't know, and maybe it's a filter, so, but it looks great. It looks amazing.
And your husband is so on it with you. He like wants to take care of you and like bring you food, right?
Yeah.
That'll change.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me my future. Yeah. But in response to your question, Roxy, I totally missed the morning sickness. Like, I feel
you did. Oh my God, not fair.
I almost threw up was when he was making a salmon during my first trimester.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, no one wants the salmon in the first trimester.
Salmon. We got to get out of the house. This is bad. This is bad.
Abort. Just no-go.
Yeah. But the fatigue is real. Oh. And especially in the first trimester, but even in the second, everybody's like, oh, your energy's going to come back. I'm still waiting for that.
Okay. So it still hasn't come back for you? Because mine did. What, like after that 14th week, I felt like, you know, like a new woman, right? When you cross that stage.
Yeah. I feel like it's right after lunch. And I don't know if this is just like getting into middle age or what, but it's like, if it's pregnancy or middle age, but right after lunch, I mean, there is this massive crash and it feels like the first trimester all over again. So I don't know. I'm just grateful that I haven't had, been nauseous.
I used to make myself vomit because I was like, okay, even saying it makes me want to vomit. But I make myself vomit because I would be so, like, I wanted to throw up so much, but I couldn't. Like, I just couldn't. And then I thought, well, this will help. Like, if I make myself throw up, I'll feel so much better. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't.
It doesn't come out, though, right? It
doesn't go away. Yes, but it's like, even if you vomit, it just doesn't, like, for people who really suffer morning sickness in those first 3 months, and you're so lucky, it's just constant food poisoning. That's what it feels like. But it not does. Actually vomiting. It's just like you're constantly...
That's dry heaving. Yeah, because it's like dry heaving, you know?
That's what's worse because there's no release at the end, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how about this? My 9th month, I actually got food poisoning.
Oh, gosh.
And I was doubled over at the toilet calling my doctor. I'm like, please, please just give me something. I don't know. She's like, I can't give you anything. And I'm literally cradling the toilet. And I was just in tears, screaming at my husband. He comes home and he's like...
Why does this make me laugh? I'm like, why does this make me happy? But I'm like, I just think this is a funny sight.
Yeah, you think, because you know David and I so well. Like, you can even picture this. Like, I'm literally, like, cramped over by the toilet. He's like, what do you want me to do? And I'm just like, fuck yeah. Hate. But that is misery on a stick right there, is being, having food poisoning in your 9th month of pregnancy. You're huge, you're swollen, you know, you feel like shit already. It's like,
yeah, that's rough. But also, you bring up a good point. Why do we still constantly say 9 months?
It's right. 10 months.
It's 10 months.
Like, I just want to shout it from the rooftop. Don't shortchange us. It is 10 months.
It is 40 weeks.
Yes.
Yes. We just ate for a long time.
But it's still hard to process. Even in my 21st week, it's hard to process being newly pregnant and not having, with this being my first child, I don't know if it'll actually hit me until she's in my arms. But you guys tell me, I don't know. I just find it really hard to grasp still.
My second baby, because I'd had so many miscarriages between them, I did not connect to her at all. Mm. Like, I was like, oh, I know there's a baby inside me and it's kicking. But because I was so afraid to lose her, I did not want to fall in love. Mm-hmm. And the minute, it's weird because I fell in love with Phoenix straight away in my stomach. I was so connected to her. When she came out, I felt even more connected. The second one, no. So I was really worried, and I would talk to a therapist and just be like, am I not going to love my child? Like, am I not connected to this? Like, what, like, cause I love Phoenix so much. And I even put on like my socials and like would ask a therapist. I'd be like, can you love a second child like you love your first? Cause you just would die for them. You'd walk in front of a bus. And the minute they put her on my chest, it's almost like I got a double rush of love because I was disconnected from her. I was like, oh my God, she's safe. She's alive. She's here. And for the hospital, I was in the hospital because I had a C-section. I was in the hospital for a good 4 or 5 days. I just stared at her. Like, I was like, just stared and licked her and bit her and smelt her. And like, I was just like, I wouldn't wash her for 4 days. You're supposed to for not a couple days because it's like good for their skin. But I would just like, it was mesmerizing. And I think it was because I didn't want to feel anything.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful.
I think for me, I like fought my cause we had a guest on last week and we were talking about birth stories, and I didn't want to have a C-section. I ended up having to have one because she was breached. So it was like a scheduled C-section. So I sort of was like protesting it. Like, I was late to my C-section. I got there late. Like,
I want to have this baby come out.
This baby is going to stay in. Yeah. Right. I literally was like, I am so like not down with this like C-section plan. So I, you know, it was late and everything, but then like Tamman was saying, like once like the baby came out and I had her like, you know, embraced her and like nestled, it was like, it immediately kicked in. It was like that mothering like instinct that you just want to like cradle them and protect them and like hold on, you know, and like not let go, you know. Mm-hmm. Could have been the drugs too, though.
For sure. That's what I'm going into. People are already like, yeah. So what's your birth plan? And I'm like, gonna go to the hospital. And that's all. I don't really want to go in with, you know, these high expectations and with this plan in mind, because I've heard time and time again that more often than not, it is going to go the complete opposite of what you think is going to happen in your mind. So, and that's how I like to kind of live my life anyway. Like, even in my travels, I don't have the set itinerary that I have to stick to. I like, or research, you know, a place to death. So I think I'm going to go into the birth with that same kind of perspective.
It's a wonderful thing to do, because I feel like when you have such a strong opinion on how you're going to birth your child, and we just talked about this in our last episode with Dr. Berlin, you feel like an utter failure because you feel like you didn't have control over the situation, and because it didn't go as planned, then you're at fault. And there's an incredible amount of shame and guilt that goes with that when you're so steadfast on like one road and you can't deviate from that. And what happens is, like a lot of us, like we have spent years like you know, feeling like we birthed our babies in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But he was just saying that the C-section, that has to be part of your birth plan as well. That has to be, even if it's the last part of your birth plan and your first plan is an unmedicated home birth, your last part of your birth plan has to be a C-section, because mm-hmm. that is a choice that you might have to make. And if it's not on your birth plan, then you spend a lot of your time, if not your whole life, regretting, you know, the way you did birth your child.
Mm, I like that. I also don't know if, I feel like my perspective may be erring on the side of just ignorance, of not doing enough, research. But that's kind of how I like to live my life. And I just moved into a new house too. And this bathtub screams, yeah. It screams.
Birth in me.
Exactly. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
You know, you mentioned your business a little bit. I want to get into that because I think it's so interesting. You've literally traveled like all over the world. You've got all of this amazing travel experience and everything, but we are in quarantine. So how has that affected your job and like also like connecting with people?
Greatly. And I feel like the word of the year is pivot. And it has been challenging in so many ways. From a professional standpoint and a personal standpoint. And I know I'm not alone in that, but it's a shit year to be in the travel industry. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everybody from hotels to airlines are on their knees, and travel bloggers alike. So I have done everything away from travel, which is, nothing I knew in the beginning. Like in the beginning of quarantine, I just didn't feel right to even write about past travels or think about future travels and go down that wanderlust path. It felt wrong. So in the beginning of quarantine, I was doing everything else, like interior design, gardening, recipes, the things I've never truly focused on, which was a fun challenge in a sense, but it also brought in so much doubt and insecurities too, because I was like, is this me? Like, does my audience even want this? Do they even like this? And so I was questioning everything I put out in the beginning, which didn't bode well for mental health. That's for damn sure. Again, I know I'm not alone in that, but for my business, that's kind of what it looked like for months on end until, and then I think you just kind of have to ask people. And that's exactly what I did. Ask the audience, poll the audience. What do you guys like? What do you guys want to see? And the response was overwhelming, almost to an embarrassing degree of, we like the lifestyle content more so than strict travel, because it's, I guess it's a little bit more relatable and it speaks to more people than just that strict travel content. So it's not a bad thing. Like there are, you know, some silver linings in all of this and growth and creation and all of this. And also I went live every day for a month teaching yoga, and then every once a week for 3 months teaching yoga. And so it brings about, I think, this creativity if you let it. And since then I've built a yoga subscription service called Limitless Movement, kind of as a cousin to Limitless Travel. And it's a beautiful thing, because I don't think I would ever have carved out the time in my travels or in my life and in, as a family next year for this platform. But now I love it. I love it so much. And it's just, another business arm that doesn't really feel like a business arm, because it's just I'm just sharing my yoga practice. So yeah, it's been a hell of a year, but I think you have to focus on the silver linings, and I think you have to pivot or this year will just eat you alive.
Yeah, we've never been through anything like this, and we just have to give ourselves grace. You know, because it's funny, we came up here in Montana, and like my expectation is every day to be amazing because I'm with my kids and my husband and we're away from Los Angeles, so it should be like all kumbaya. And there's been really difficult moments, and like people sometimes, you know, you want to share that on social, but sometimes you're like, you just don't want to be a bag of whinging, you know, a bag of whinge, because like sometimes people just don't relate to that, you know, so,
totally.
But yeah, it's not always, it's not always rainbows. And talking about not always being rainbows, what we introed you in the beginning is a previvor. So that's a term that was first coined by, I think it was the organization called FORCE, which is Facing Our Risk of Cancer Empowered. They describe a person who is a survivor of a predisposition to cancer, meaning they have a high risk of developing a specific type of cancer, but they have not been diagnosed yet. So tell us your breast cancer story that ultimately led you to removing both of your breasts, because I'm sure it wasn't an easy decision. And when I say that I admire you so much, I thought about what you would have had to have gone through to have made that decision. And I don't know if I would have been strong enough to, you know? So tell us a bit about your story.
Yeah. I think each person walks a different path and it should be respected. There's so many different paths when you are a provider or are diagnosed with cancer. And this month is a special month. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but I definitely like to shed light on it throughout all 365 days of the year because it is so important and it's taken so many lives too soon. Even though I think we've made a lot of progress with treatment and everything. But for me, it all started when I will never forget. I was living in Argentina at the time. It was 2014. Then I was in my apartment and I got a call from both of my parents. You know, when they're both on the line, it's not, it's not good. Mm-hmm. And my dad said it first and he said, your mom has breast cancer. And just like I'm taking myself back to that moment. And it is just devastating because you are scared shitless that you're going to lose a parent. And sorry.
No.
And I feel so, so damn lucky because she's thriving today and she's doing so well. But in that moment, you have no idea. And so then that led to my two sisters and I to get tested for that same gene that gave her cancer, that same gene mutation that gave her cancer. And it's just funny how the dice, how it falls. My older sister tested positive. I tested positive and my younger sister tested negative. And we all kind of walked different paths. My older sister had her family first and just 3 months ago had her preventative double mastectomy. Whereas I, 40 days after finding out I was positive for the gene, was on an OR table, getting my breasts taken off. And it's so emotional to lose a body part that has grown with you for, you know, 20 something years. At the time I was 29 and it's unlike anything else I've ever been through, but it was so beautiful and it broke me open in so many ways. And especially with social media too, I've never found so much joy in social media than sharing this experience because I knew I wasn't going to be able to share travel because I wasn't going to travel. So I was like, my mindset was, well, I'm going to be bedridden for at least 4 to 5 weeks, if not more. Might as well share the story. If it helps one person, then great. I've done my job. But it was the most beautiful symbiotic relationship is how I like to describe it because these complete strangers helped me heal in ways I can't even describe just virtually. And I think vice versa with me continuing to share my story. But I just go back to 2017, the night before, and it's just emotionally and mentally draining. And for women, especially who are really attached to their breasts and love their breasts, it is like a death. It's like you have to grieve this body part that's taken off of you too. And for me, I've always had extremely small B boobs. I mean,
right here.
I never really paid a lot of attention to them. My hips from the get-go were like massive and my mom's always called them baby making hips, which is perfect for now. So those are always the center of attention for me of like, she had to find like elastic waistband jeans growing up, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I think I missed that whole grieving situation mm-hmm. because I was never super attached to my breasts. And my whole silver lining in the whole thing, I mean, I truly think you always have to look for that. And I'm an optimist. So like pandemic, what's the silver lining? Okay. Mm-hmm. Double mastectomy. What's the silver lining? And I talked to my plastic surgeon and he was just like, okay, what are you thinking? Do you want reconstructive surgery? You know, how big or small do you want to go? And I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's go a little bigger. Mm-hmm. Why not? If I have to get my breast taken off, let's try a whole new body type.
Which you got a triple D.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I got a 34C and it was like a whole new world. It's a whole new way of dressing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was wild. But going back to that double mastectomy, I mean, so many people choose various routes. They can choose preventative surgery. They can choose surveillance and going to doctor's appointments, you know, every few months, which didn't work for my schedule at the time, you know, being all over the world all the time. So I knew I wanted to do this. And a lot of people ask me that. They're like, why double mastectomy? Why not, you know, surveillance and going to get MRIs and ultrasounds and mammograms every 6 months. But that's why I don't want that anxiety always in the back of my head is like, is today the day that gene is going to get turned on?
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't looked back. I think it was a damn good decision, but every woman walks her own path.
So do you think, by, you know, having this change and doing the double mastectomy because you, you know, you didn't have your breasts, did it make you connect with your femininity in a different way?
Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I've never been so in tune with my body. And like I said, never really paid attention to my boobs. And now that's the complete opposite, even though they're foobs, fake boobs completely.
And foobs, I like it.
in every sense of the word, I am so connected to them more so than my real boobs when they actually had tissue and mammary glands and everything. And I won't be able to breastfeed, which is something I think I'll miss when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also watched my older sister do it. It looks painful as hell, but
it's really hard.
It looks hard. And I admire the women who do it. And I think I will miss it when the time comes, but I know formula fed babies are, mm-hmm. you know, grow up to be just as great.
Yes.
And the thing is that, you know, that you can't breastfeed. I think what's harder for the woman is when you want to so badly and you're like, well, what's wrong with my breasts or my body? I can't breastfeed, like what a failure I am. I mean, mm-hmm. I tried with both my kids. I made it for 3 months. I did everything, like everything, to the point of like, I was like, I'm going to have to stop for my mental health or I'm going to actually lose the plot. But at least, you know, like, I think you have control over that knowing, okay, this is the path that I'm going to take and this is what I'm going to do. So when you mention the gene, because Roxy and I aren't as aware of what that's, can you explain what that gene means? Because I know that, you know, Angelina Jolie brought such a light to, because mm-hmm. she got a double mastectomy too, didn't she?
And hysterectomy okay. too. Yeah.
Yeah. So what exactly is this gene? What does it mean for people that do have it? And what is like the probability of developing cancer when mm-hmm. you find out that you have that gene?
Yeah. Good question. So the two most, the two genes that are most tested for breast cancer are BRCA1 gene and the BRCA2 gene mutation. And they are similar, but they have differences. For example, I think if you have the BRCA1 gene mutation, you have a slightly higher risk of getting breast cancer by the age of 70. I think it's 80%. And then for BRCA2, like myself, I believe I have a 70% chance of getting breast cancer by the age of 70. And so there's slight differences. But now, I mean, there are so many other genes that could give you cancer. And so, for example, my mom was tested for an entire panel that we know of, and her panel came back with a BRCA2 gene mutation. And so that's why my two sisters and I were only tested for the BRCA2 gene mutation. Mm-hmm. I think we're only getting further and further along with that kind of technology and genetics, which is amazing. But at the same time, you can get my, or I'll never forget it. I walked into my genetic counselor the very first time I got tested for this gene. And she was like, you can get breast cancer from one of three ways: genetically, from the environment, or from bad luck. And so I really look at my younger sister, who tested negative for this one gene mutation that she was tested for, but that doesn't mean a lot. I mean, she could be the one who is diagnosed one day with breast cancer from the environment, from bad luck, from another gene we don't know about yet. Mm-hmm. So I think we have come a long way with genetic testing, but I don't know if it'll ever stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a lot to learn. I didn't know any of this until my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it's interesting because her father gave her the gene, and that's a big misconception. A lot of people think just women can carry this gene. Mm-hmm. But her father gave her that gene mutation, and then she passed it down to all of us. And I know she carries so much guilt for that, which is going to be interesting. I am anxious to know if my baby girl, you know, carries this gene mutation as well. But I tell her time and time again, because I'll never forget it, when I called her to tell her that I was positive, mm-hmm. Just immediate tears, just so much mm-hmm. guilt. But I like to flip it on its head, because had I not known this, had it not been for her, I would have never, I may never know. And I could get, you know, breast cancer next year, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So I think knowledge is truly power. And because we knew from her, you know, I can do something about it. My older sister can do something about it. And it's mm-hmm. a beautiful thing.
So what advice would you give to somebody who might be at a higher risk for cancer, or even somebody who is newly diagnosed?
That's a good question. Mm. Newly diagnosed, I think the best thing you could have is a good, strong support system. Mm-hmm. That helped me in so many ways, from, you know, close family to complete strangers on the internet. And there are beautiful people. There's a beautiful community online that you can talk to and share your story. And I truly think sharing brings us together like nothing else. I think human suffering is something everybody's felt. Mm-hmm. And in a weird way, that connects us all. It humanizes us all. And for other people, I get asked that so many times. They're like, how do I even get started? Mm-hmm. Maybe they were adopted, so they don't know their family history. Or maybe they have an aunt who had breast cancer, or somebody on down the line who had breast cancer. If you have any family history, I think the perfect way to start is seeing a genetic counselor, but that may not be available in your immediate area. So talk to your gynecologist. Mm-hmm. Also, myriad.com, it has a plethora of resources. I will never forget getting my results, first of all, from a phone call, but also in the mail. And I got it from Myriad Genetics, Myriad Oncology, who I will never forget it, had in big red bold letters at the top, you know, you're positive for this gene mutation. But their website, for anybody who wants immediate information, mm-hmm. their website, myriad.com, MYRAID, has so much information. You can even go look at your risk score yourself. Mm-hmm. So for 10% of the population, about 10%, it's known that that's the genetic, those are the people who have genetic predispositions, but the other 90% isn't genetically predisposed. Mm-hmm. It could be the environment, bad luck, whatever it may be. And so you can go get your risk score right then and there from Myriad's website. If you want to get tested, they can also send you an at-home test, which is amazing, because even if you're not covered by insurance, mm-hmm. this test is somewhere around the $150 mark. So it's mm-hmm. it's pretty affordable, and it's amazing what 2020 has brought us in terms of technology.
Mm-hmm. Is this gene only something, and forgive me if this is ignorant, only in women, or can men have it too?
Men can definitely carry it. Yeah, mm-hmm. can definitely. And it just materializes in different ways too mm-hmm. in men. For example, my grandfather passed down that gene mutation from to my mom, but it materialized in him in throat cancer and head and neck cancer.
Gosh.
So that's what he passed away from. So other men, I think it materializes into pancreatic cancer.
Oh my gosh.
If I'm not mistaken. So it just, it looks different. It can look different in men, but that's a massive misconception. And it's funny because I put on my blog, a big pregnancy blog full of frequently asked questions before I announced the gender. Mm-hmm. And I talked about my BRCA gene mutation and how I was anxious to see if my baby carried that gene mutation. And so many people were like, oh, it's a girl, because you basically just gave it away. But that is not the case. I mean, that mm-hmm. is, men and women alike can carry the gene.
Well, I think people also don't realize that men can get breast cancer also.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's definitely something that men should be, aware of as well.
Yeah. It can materialize as breast cancer or another form of cancer in men for sure.
Yes. And everyone should feel their boobies, especially this month. I mean, they should do it all the time.
Yes. I like to feel your boobies, Roxy. I like to feel your boobies. On a Saturday night, feel your boobies.
How are you going to feel them if you're all the way in Montana?
I know. That's why I have to come back just so I can feel your boobies.
I love that you brought that up.
Right? It's all about feeling your boobies because, I mean, you should do it all the time anyway, but particularly this month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So,
yes.
What are you feeling? Okay. So what are you feeling for? Because for me, yeah. I'm like, well, you know, especially when I was breastfeeding, I said to Sean, I was like, I think these are lumps in my breast. And he's like, they're just hardened milk because you do get that like mastitis. I didn't think about my breasts as much as I did when I was breastfeeding and I was touching them and I was looking at them and it was lumps. And then, you know, that was obviously milk that you had to like massage out through the nipple. But what are you exactly looking for when
it's such a good question?
I have no idea.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't, because there's even this hashtag, like feel it on the first, which is feel yourself up on the first of every month, just as like a good reminder of when to do it once a month, mm-hmm. but you can do it whenever. I mean, all day, every day. Don't be afraid to feel yourself up. But I think a lot of people are just like, how do I even go about this? So I feel like, I don't know how graphic I want to get, but
go for it.
We had someone take their clothes off on a podcast.
You have to really, I mean, start at the top with two fingers, and it's, you go pretty deep. I mean, especially if you have dense breasts, which yes. a lot of women do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to really put the pressure on. And I like to start at the top and just, you kind of have to walk your fingers too, or you'll miss it if you kind of pick your fingers up and go to another spot. Mm-hmm. So you kind of got to walk your fingers, and I go into a circular motion all the way around the breast, circling to the nipple. Mm-hmm. And you're feeling for any kind of lumps and bumps. And if you feel anything that's suspicious, you kind of just like move in on it, see if you can see the outline of it. But I think more the important takeaway here is to know your body. Mm-hmm. I mean, to do that frequently, every month, every week, whatever it may be, and talk to your doctor, because it could be, you know, that you are breastfeeding, and that's where a lot of women get confused, because they're like, is this a lump? Is this just hardened milk? What is this? And so if it really is, you know, and it makes you anxious, go see your doctor.
Yes.
I think, yeah, talk to your doctor, know your body.
Yes, it's so important. I think ladies out there, and men too, you know, if you do feel something out of place, go see your doctor, because it's better safe. Yep, don't avoid it. It's better safe than sorry. I know a lot of people get scared because they think, you know, their mind obviously like jumps to the worst possible case scenario, but it's like, it's better to know and to act and do something than to not know and let things go, you know?
Absolutely. Especially now when so many people are avoiding the hospital because of this pandemic, which yes. I understand, but I mean, mask up and go get a mammogram. Mask yes. up and go see your doctor, because that is so important. Mammograms are down 87% in this pandemic, which I mean, I can't even imagine the effects this is going to have on undiagnosed cases.
Right.
And it's so, yeah. So please, please, please go put your mask on.
It's funny because you know, like you were saying about avoidance when it came to your baby, I feel like you know, what you were saying, just in general, when it comes to anything medical, I mean, I know even if I have a sore tooth, I wait, like I waited a year to get a filling. Isn't that insane?
Wow.
Yeah, because I just, I was just so not wanting to know, like I've had one root canal on my tooth and it was so painful and it took weeks for me to like feel better. So it's that avoidance thing. It's that, but if you avoid, you make things worse and then you make things worse and you might never come back from that. So it's like, we all need to realize that avoiding doesn't fix the situation. It actually just makes the situation much worse especially certain medical issues.
Yes. You need to get in there, get seen by your doctor. My husband gets so annoyed with me because he thinks I'm like in a doctor's office. Like every, I am like, literally I'll have like a cut and I'm like, oh God,
I need to go. It's to
sepsis.
Yeah.
I love it. Same.
I think too, my dad is an oncologist. So I think like growing up around that, like we always had family talks about health at the dinner table. And you know, it's always like, he's like, go get seen. If you feel like anything's wrong, go get seen. So my husband just gets so annoyed with me because he is like, literally our health insurance is like going through the, like, well, you need to just chill out.
I think that's awesome. But for those who just avoid it and are so scared by it, that is why I will always be an advocate and share, because I love nothing more than getting emails or DMs being like, because of you, I went to get tested. Because of you, I got this surgery. And it is just, it goes all over me. Like, it brings me to tears. It's the best thing.
It's saving lives. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought, like, even this podcast, if just one person goes and gets checked and you've saved one person's life, then you're doing, and you're doing the right thing.
I mean, we all know somebody who has been affected by this disease. It is so prevalent. And so I thank y'all for even like touching on it. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, we don't have that much time. So we have to talk about, now that we've talked about something that's so important, we have to talk about things that are so unimportant. like, I didn't even know. Roxy last night texted me and she was like, do you know she was on The Bachelor? Because Roxy loves The Bachelor. And I was like, no, I didn't, because I've never seen an episode before. And she's like, no, we must ask her about this because it's like my favorite show.
So life is about balance. We got to talk about the important stuff and then The Bachelor for sure.
I mean, we have to cover all bases. Wait, so you, okay, well, people might not know, you are a Guinness Book of World Records holder for the longest on-screen kiss with Bachelor Sean Lowe.
Put it on the resume.
How long was it?
Yeah, how long was it? Tell us.
I think it ended up being just over 4 minutes, I want to say. But
how do you breathe when you're kissing somebody that long?
Oh, breathe through your nose, Roxy.
But
we have to put a mask over your nose.
But then you're in a full face sweat, and it's not a good look for anybody. And what's terrible is that to be in the Guinness Book of World Records for world's longest on-screen kiss, your lips cannot separate. And so I think in the beginning we were trying to, you know, make it sexy and flirty and fun. And in a make out, your lips separate. So we had to start all over. And by this point, we're just like full body sweat. Our faces are sweating. There's a crowd on Hollywood Boulevard. We're like, what? My parents are going to see this. My dress is riding up my ass and there's a camera right there, but this is back in 2012. Okay. And now I think it was, I want to say it was Bachelor Australia who broke our record, and like, who knows who.
Of course we did.
Yeah, you sure did.
So, okay. You have to rate the kiss. How was Sean Lowe as a kisser?
It must have been four minutes. It must have been pretty good.
For that kiss, it was like in the negatives, because all we could do was this.
Oh. I'm really confused because I don't watch The Bachelor. I'm really confused. So you knew that there was a Guinness Book of Records?
No.
And you wanted to beat it? Like, I don't understand. So you're going, okay, so we have to beat 4 minutes. So everyone, like, I don't get how this works.
No, I'll take you through the day. So we are all corralled down to the living room by Chris Harrison, who is like, oh, there's a date card. And we're like, oh my God, who's going to get it? And somebody reads off the date card and it has my name on it. And it says something, there's like some cute little pun, like something about breaking records. And I'm like, oh, what could it be? So I get dressed we get in this limo and we're heading from Agora Hills, where the Bachelor Mansion is, mm-hmm. all the way to Hollywood Boulevard and get out in front of the jank Guinness Book of World Records. It's like we go inside and it's just, you know, one of those museums where you're just like, I can't believe they kind of, you know, they kind of spent money on this. Like, why? I also can't believe this is a bachelor date, but yay, here we are. You know, put a smile on, like just at that point, just excited to be with him because you get no time with him.
Really. You got 4.5 minutes on really good time.
Lucky me.
You made it work.
But at this point, we're walking around the museum and we're looking at, you know, all the records. And we still have no idea what's happening. I'm sure he does from production. But so we get to this curtain and, you know, Chris Harrison comes out and he's like, okay, now for the big, you know, finale, you will be setting the world record for world's longest on-screen kiss. And I'm just like, shit, my dad's going to see this. And that's fine. And then we go for it right there. And there's this like legit guy from Guinness Book of World Records with a plaque and everything. Oh my God. and then we make it happen. And then we have dinner that night on the rooftop of the Roosevelt Hotel.
Okay. Magic.
And then my best friend from the show, wins, is proposed to, and then I am a bridesmaid in their wedding. And yeah, it's not awkward. It's not awkward.
Was it? I know. I was going to say, how awkward was that?
it's really not. Like at this point, it feels like ancient history. Honestly, and they're so happy. I mean, he still to this day is the only bachelor who is still with his first draft pick.
Oh, so he's also breaking a record.
And they have three kids and they're beautiful. Like the best, the coolest family ever. So it all worked out exactly as it should have.
So are you watching this season of The Bachelorette with Claire?
I am.
And so you're like with Claire? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You might as well just say, are you eating an English muffin with Julie?
Let's break it down for Tammy.
What are you thinking about this season?
Well, Claire and I were on Bachelor Winter Games together a couple of years ago. And so we got to become good friends then. And I love Claire. And I think she is fierce. Y'all, she is like fucking fierce and it's great. And I love her because she's 39 and hasn't settled. And I think she is such a great role model for women out there who are like, should I settle? I'm getting older. Do I not? Do I just wait and put myself out there for the right person? Mm. And I think she's a great role model for that. But I know she's caught a lot of shit for the past, I don't know, however long she's been Bachelorette now, throughout this whole pandemic, just like anybody does when they put themselves out there as a lead. And I hate that because she's nothing but fierceness, looking for the love of her life. Mm-hmm. I will say like this season is definitely different because obviously they're not in the Bachelor Mansion. They're in the freaking depths of hell in Palm Springs in the summer. And it's just so different. But I gotta throw it to them, like for actually moving forward, for making it work, for putting these guys in quarantine for 2 weeks. And it's a little slower, but I think next week it's going to get, all hell is going to break loose. Like it looks insane next week. I don't even know.
I got some catching up to do.
I know. You got to get on your bachelor girl, bachelorette
train.
Before we leave, because we're going to get our time's going to run out. We're going to do a really quick travel edition, this or that, if you're into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. This or that travel edition. Okay. Okay. Whole row in economy with your fiance, or one seat in business and your fiance's in coach.
Ooh. One seat in business.
Yeah, of course, right? You're my girl.
Y'all, come on. Like, you're by yourself anyway for a long haul flight.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I used to leave my husband and coach with the kids. I'm not even kidding. I was like, bye. I would never do that. I would never be in coach with the kids. And I'd be like, no, it's not.
No. Other way around. Yeah.
Okay. This one is a little bit naughty. Sex on the beach or sex in an elevator? Loving an elevator.
I think elevator. Y'all, I just can't get on board with all the sand.
I know.
Like, I don't want to play that dicey game. And I mean, I don't know, bragging rights in an elevator? That's
right. It's kind of hot.
I hate being stuck in things. So I'd be pretty upset about being stuck in there.
I wonder what the percentage of elevators that have hidden cameras are.
Yes. I bet they all have them pretty much at the now.
I think so too. I think a lot of security guards have seen quite a bit in their day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then if you stop an elevator, can you just open it again? Like, that's the thing. What if it just you stop the elevator and then it's just stopped?
But have you ever seen Grey's Anatomy?
This is not real life. This is not what happens in real life.
I swear, you can just press a button and it stops, and you can just make your moment as magical as you want, as long as you want. And that's my fantasy anyway.
I feel like that's not gonna happen.
You're right. Probably right.
Okay, bad turbulence on a plane or food poisoning.
Oh God. They're both terrible. They're both so bad. I'm going to go with turbulence just because hopefully it's short lived, but at the same time, I've almost grabbed one of those plastic knives and just taken myself out because turbulence for me is that bad.
Really? But I hate turbulence. I mean, but I feel too, like you travel so much that you'd be fine with it.
No, absolutely not. I like my Ambien. Can't really take that now, but I was a fan of it for a little bit. I know, don't judge me. A lot of people have a lot to say about that, but
that's free.
But food poisoning lingers longer than turbulence. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. Swim with sharks or skydive?
I'm going to go, I've never swam with sharks. Well, I have a scuba dive with sharks, but they're so friendly. You kind of just forget about it. They get a bad rap.
They do. You know what? We did the same thing on our honeymoon in Tahiti. We swam with the sharks. They could not have cared less that we were there.
They
were
friendly until they bite your freaking arm off.
Now, as a safeguard, I did push my husband in front just in case.
Yeah. I mean, they're friendly unless they're hungry, guys.
Yeah. I don't know. I've also had a really scary experience while skydiving because I was doing it for the first time in New Zealand, mm-hmm. and about 800 feet from the ground, our canopy deflated, and because we caught turbulence. And so then we started free falling so close to the ground. And I was like, is this supposed to happen? And then about a half a second later, it reinflated and we landed fine and everything. But at the time, I mean, that's not normal for it to happen that close to the ground. So
oh my God.
I don't know. It's, they're both, swim with sharks, 100%.
I mean, I don't know. I would love to think I would skydive one day for that rush, but I went indoor skydiving in Vegas once. It's not that pleasant. I'm like, this is really windy. It is hurting my face. Is it painful when you fall? Do you feel like you're falling?
I feel, you kind of feel like your eyelashes are going to fly off. I think the second time was definitely more enjoyable because
you went again.
Yeah. The first time
after you almost died. Smart. Okay.
Yeah. The first time you black out. You're like, what is this? I'm going to die. And the second time you actually take it in and process it and enjoy it a little bit more.
Wow. You're brave to get back on the horse and do it though.
That was a surprise Valentine's Day date where I didn't really have a choice.
Okay. Well, I do feel like with motherhood, it's the same idea. The first time you kind of just black out. You're just like, what the fuck just happened? But the second time I think is more enjoyable. That's why Roxy, you have to have a second time.
I know. Right. I gotta have the number two.
Okay. Well, let's do two more and then we'll let you go. Four Seasons or the Sixth Senses.
Oh, that's a good one. I think the Sixth Senses is such a unique concept. I mean, when I was there in it was Yao Noi in Thailand, and they're like barefoot. They have this barefoot policy. You can just roam around. And I just think it's, not that Four Seasons is cookie cutter, because every place is unique to their destination. But I think the Sixth Senses is just like a step above in uniqueness, mm-hmm. And unique touches that yeah. you're just like, I've never really experienced anything like this. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think Sixth Senses.
Okay. Bora Bora or Mykonos?
Mm-hmm. I have never been to Bora Bora.
Always wanted to go.
Me too.
This is where I went for my honeymoon. It's so wonderful.
Oh my gosh. Where did you, can I ask where you stayed?
Yes. And I should probably remember this, but it was 15 years ago.
And you were drinking a lot.
I know. I was drinking a lot. We got tattoos. Yes, because apparently tattoos originated in that area. So we were like, we might as well live like a local and like go do it. So that's how I have my tramp stamp.
Amazing. That's a great story.
Oh, thanks. So actually I have not been to Mykonos, but I am actually dying to go to Mykonos and the Greek islands.
It's great. It's kind of known as the party island. But you can make it whatever you want. And it's, last time I was there was this exact time in 2016. Couldn't put the camera down because there is beauty at every freaking turn. And that's what that's what I love. But also I can put the camera down and like drink till the day is, you know.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
So good. It just
and the food hits, too, right? The
it
food.
Hits everything. You have the beach, you have architecture, you have mm-hmm. food, you have nightlife. It's so good. It's so good.
One of my favorite places in the world was Cambodia, actually. Yeah. I was doing a movie in Bangkok for 3 months, and we went to Cambodia and Vietnam and Krabi, and I miss Thailand. Ugh. You know, all this stuff is giving me wanderlust, and it does make me sad because I realize that it's going to be a while. I don't even think we're going to be back to traveling again in 2021. I think it's going to be a little longer. Someone in the movie business told me it's going to be about 3 years of this. Just because, you know, like, is there a vaccine? Do people take it? Do people not take it?
Right.
You know, right. How are we really going to eradicate this? How are we going to control it? How are we going to keep our countries safe from people coming in and out? It's going to be a time. I think we're going to have to buckle up and just realize it is what it is, and it just, we can't control it, and it's not going to be on our timeline. You
know? Yeah. I think, somebody the other day, and I can't take credit for it, but I really liked their perspective because they were like, okay, what about the pandemic from 1918, the bird flu pandemic? And then they were like, well, what happened afterwards? And it was the roaring 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this age of like creation and invention and, so that's, I'm hopeful that that's coming and we can kind of have the roaring 20s again. But yeah, that's just my optimism peeking through.
Let's hope
the sun always rises. Sun always rises after it's dark, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, Roxy Soxy.
I mean, I can't believe our time is over. You were so lovely.
I'm going to go back to bed.
I'm jealous. Now I've had too much coffee.
I'm getting back to bed. I've like been up since 3. I'm done, guys. I'm
out. You're like, and that's the end of my day.
Well, don't text me. Don't call me.
Full permission. Yeah.
Right.
Thanks so much.
Okay, Leslie, where can everyone keep up with you? Tell them the best place to find you.
I'm on Instagram at Leslie Ann Murphy, and my blog is called The Road Less Traveled, less with one S as in Leslie.
Very nice.
Amazing. Yay. And we are Women on Top Official on Instagram.
And Women on Top Podcast on Facebook.
And I am Tamman Sarsak.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And we are...
Women
on